Everyone, we're supposed to be learning about Kiddushin. As it happens, Yeshiva is learning Masechet Kiddushin. So I feel it's appropriate. Yeshiva is learning Kiddushin. We should open up Masechet Kiddushin, see what it says, and how it impacts on some of the things that we do and don't do, should do or shouldn't do. So we'll start the Gemara Masechet Kiddushin on Daf Ayin Amud Aleph. The Gemara tells us a remarkable Gemara. Kolanosa isha l'shemamon havin l'mbonim she'enim u'ganim sh'nema b'ashem b'gadu ki bonim zorim yoladu. Wow. Man marries for money, his children are not going to be good. Quotes a pasuk. Rashi says, bonim zorim me isha p'sulalo u'l'shemamon nesava k'dimisayim k'ra. So Rashi limits this Gemara to a case of somebody who marries a woman who's pasul. So the Achronim asked, it's poshut that way. How can you say that? That's mamash poshut. What is with the shame mamon? Not a shame mamon. Okay, you marry the, she's poshut, goes to the shame mamon. You look on the Shiltus, and the parish of the Netziv and the Shiltus, Shilta Mem Aleph said cotton hay. He says, no. He's marrying a woman who's not Lefi Erko. She's beneath his spiritual station. And he's marrying her because of her elevated financial station. Now we understand very well. The Ochas Chaim says, "No, she is a ksheir the shem mamon, ain't a mamon shel yosher." And if they offered you the money and they backed out, you shouldn't fight about it. This actually made its way into the Shulchan Aruch, very beginning of the Eben Ezer. They taught as follows: Simon Bey Sif Aleph. Adam Ishan Shieshba Shum Psul. Ramo, Kalanosa Isha Psula Mishamaman, Havalan Bona Shenem Uganim, Ava Balavachi, Shena Psula Alav, Elishanosa Mishamaman, Mutter. Okay. All right, that's based upon Rashi. The Vilna Gaon is not so happy with this. Vilna Gaon says, it doesn't seem to be right. Pashup Shat in the Gemara is that it should not be done. The Ramah quotes a little bit later on. In those days, it was a business getting married. So therefore what? It's also punishing and mugan. Elakoma shita no chamev v'chamoso yigach ba'ayin tov v'az yatzliach. Okay, so if they give you money, it's good. But that should be contingent upon the money, that's no good. You know, there's the famous Tshuva Seramah, the case where they were going to make a Friday afternoon wedding, which was the minute in those days to save money. They couldn't afford a wedding meal. The Friday night meal was the main meal. And they would haggling over the dowry. It was a Yesoma. And it got dark. The Ramah actually performed the wedding on Shabbos. Pilu, they employ him not to embarrass the Yishi Kali Yesoma. Chubas Ramah. You see, we're haggling and haggling. That's all, you know. And the world that you and I inhabit is not so common. I mean, I don't know. And other parts of the world, they do all the haggling. They do it in advance, not at the wedding. It's plenty of, it's a precondition. You know what they call in Eretz Yisrael? Sidur Malay. That means they buy an apartment to live in and an apartment to rent out and live off the income. No one offered you Sidur Malay at my time when you were younger. Okay. I guess. Okay. It was no Siabas Tamat Chacham, so that's more than poor than all these other things. Anyway, but it's important to understand. We're talking about Kiddushin to, you know, for those in the room who are not married yet and for those who are dealing with people who are getting married is an important point to keep in mind. Okay, that's number one. Number two, we're learning the Masechta Kiddushin, turning another page. A Gemara Naf Ayin Aleph, Amud Aleph, amazing Gemara. Kesef Metar Mamzerim. What's going on? Money can purify Mamzerim. Sounds like Reform Judaism. Well, then the Gemara says in the same context, well, mishpacha shenitma'a nitma'a. Once the family, the psul is forgotten about, so it's forgotten about, and we don't reopen it. I presume if you have enough money, you can make people forget about it. That's the implication. There's another Gemara, an Ayin Aleph Med Beis, which tells us as follows. The Gemara says over here that it seems to be a discussion in the Gemara. The Gemara discusses, actually, Ayin Beis Med Beis. A discussion in the Gemara as follows. Mamzei unesini tahorim lasad lavo. Wow. Mashiach comes, the owner becomes, everything's going to be mutter. How can that be? The Torah doesn't change. It's one of the ikrei emunah. What do the words mean? That's pshat. So there's a whole discussion whether these two Gemaras, in fact, are linked to one another or separate from one another. There's Iran. Can't go into all the details right now. But all this, everything here, is related to yet another Gemara, a third Gemara, which is enough Ayin Gimel and Aleph. Lo Yovo Mamzer Bekal Hashem, Mamzer Valihud Lo Yovo, or Mamzer Safek Yovo, etc., etc. So the question, how do you understand this din? These are all connected one way or another, and we spent the whole summer, a lot of the time in the summer to learn these in Yonim. Let's give you a brief, very brief synopsis. There's a machlokas aposkim. I'll just give you a couple of my makomas. We don't spend that much time on it. On this very issue. Oh. So the Ran, in discussing Mamzer Vade, seems to make a comparison to another Gemara Kiddush much earlier about Orla B'chutz Loretz. There we are taught that Orla B'chutz Loretz is Halacha L'Moshe B'Sinai. Vaday also suffik mutter. And according to Rav Rishonim, that's Paskin Shulchan Aruch based upon a Rashi. As they say in America, if you don't know, it won't hurt you. The Pashpash on the Gemara there is, I can tell you, you take a fruit off a tree, I'm not going to look, close my eyes, and you can know full well that it's Arla, but since I don't know, I can eat the fruit. And there's a comparison made in the Ran and other places. To this case of Mamzer Vaday for low Mamzer Suffolk. That's one approach. If that's the case, the whole idea of Nitma is Lav Dafka. Nitma is a way that we don't know. But there could be a Mamzer who's not Nitma, there's a family. No, Nitma means there's a family got mixed in with other people. No one got mixed in. We know for sure, but I don't know. So you can read a Shidduch with someone who's a Mamzer, as long as the person who's marrying him doesn't know. No, you won't know, won't hurt you. That's one approach. Okay. This is the opinion of Rabbi Chanan, for example, in Kovach Yerim, and others. But of course, if I know something, then I have to stay away. Others, it could be Chazon Ish, have a totally different approach. No. Mishpacha shenitma or nitma is dafka. That's part of the Mesorah, the halacha. Has to be mixed in with others. If it's mixed in with others, then it's put them for someone to marry, even if that person knows that there was a suffix mixed into this family somewhere. And Mamzer is not the same as Arla. And if it's not nitma, it's also for sure. I'm losing people, but just giving you a few headlines based on the Sechta Kiddush. I don't want to start this year with a Kiddush about the opening of Kiddush. And of course, this comes up because the first responsibility of every Messiah Kiddush is to see to it that the marriage is a permissible marriage. You're not supposed to preside of a marriage which is a violation of halacha. So, how do you know? You meet a couple, you have to find out if they're eligible to marry one another. So, the main responsibility in this regard is to find out that they're both Jewish, because intermarriage is still prohibited despite the fact that it became a majority in America. The Torah's laws don't change. It's prohibited. So you'll say, well, how do I find out? So there's a kind of called chazaka. We assume that the person is a chazaka, that he's becheskes kashrus. How do all of us sitting in the room, how do we know that we're Jewish? can trace himself back to Avraham Avinu? This week's parasha. Lech Lecha. Who can trace himself back to Avraham Avinu? Raise your hand. Yaakov Avinu. It's not even Jewish. Chazaka. We're coming from... But these chazakas work, it's 9 years, 90, and based upon, again, on Poskim, I'm just going to say about Peh, there's no time to read you from the original sources, that it's based on a chazaka that people marry appropriately. That chazaka, Laniyas Daiti, applies when people are either observant or in communities, but even if they're not observant, but intermarriage is a pariah, it's something which is unheard of and would be viewed violently by the community, even if it's not observant, which was the case 100 years ago. There were many, many, many non-observant Jews 100 years ago, okay, 1916. But the intermarriage is a very, 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 very small percentage. It was considered to be there was someone intermarried with Sitchiva for him. It's considered to be like dead. That was the mentality of 100 years ago, even among the non-observant. Okay, but that's all changed. That's all changed, like it or not. It changed, you know, gradually. The first 50 years, it climbed up from almost unheard of to the what we'll call the Miyu Tamotsui. That's usually considered about 10%. That's what it was around 50 years ago. I'm going to give you all approximations. And now, in America, it's the majority. Shem Yirach. So, if the people were not observant, where intermarriage is nothing wrong with it. It's you know, that's how it is. So, then obviously, you cannot assume the person is Jewish. It's based upon the fact that he had a great-grandfather who had a long white beard and was a Talmud Chacham. Things, unfortunately, spun out of control. So, if the people are frum, and there's an unbroken chain of frum people as far as we know. There's probably no need to ask, but I still always say it's a good thing to ask any converts in your family. Because if conversions are always suspect, especially in America, where there's no centralized authority, anyone could do a conversion. It could be a completely invalid conversion. It's just done for the sake of marriage, where the convert has no idea of what it means to be Jewish, nor any change whatsoever. Rav Moshe has numerous tshuvas where he writes, if there's no change whatsoever in the person's conduct, even though they went to the mikvah and they lip service, they said we accept everything, he's an absolute non-Jew. Rav Moshe has another tshuva in which he wrote that if they do something, they change a little bit, then, you know, probably not Jewish, but perhaps Jewish. And in a startling comment of the story of the times of the 40s or 50s, I believe it was, in Ohio somewhere, he told the rabbi that even the people that will convert are not going to be frum, it's better that you should do it rather than a conservative rabbi should do it. Because a conservative rabbi, he's puzzled the Dionysus to the guy who's certainly non-Jewish. If you do it, well, there's a chance he may be Jewish. What's Rav Moshe basing himself on? The person intermarried to Jewish people anyway. That's the reality. Better have at least a slim chance that he's Jewish rather than have no chance he's Jewish. You know, this is now 50 years later, we can't understand such a psak where he makes such a sakus. But that's where it's true. Print the children of Moshe. Of course, again, we can't go through all the Hilchos Geiros over here, but my view has always been, I repeat, always been, that if someone converts by Orthodox rabbi and they convert to the level of observance of the community that they are joining, even though that level is not perfect, they are considered to be Jewish. Now, in theory, one can extend this even to total non-observance, but the issue is that if an observant rabbi is conducting the conversion, he will undoubtedly inform the potential convert about the importance of Jewish law. Mamanashach, if it's a reformer, conservative rabbi, Rav Moshe writes, the geris, no geris, by ipso facto, because it's not a kosher bez. It's an Orthodox rabbi, then they're going to tell them Orthodox law. But what kind of Orthodox law they're going to tell them will depend on the nature of the Orthodox rabbi in the community. So therefore, another children of Moshe, by people who convert, but they don't keep every last halach of tznius, so the implication is that conversion would be a good conversion, as opposed to if they convert and they don't keep Shabbos and kashrus, that presumably it would not be a good conversion. Now, what I just said now has become more relevant in the last 2 days. But I won't say any more than that. Okay. So. Okay. So. Almost I'm talking about? Are you doing okay? I don't know where your heads. Okay. Okay. Rabbi Osai, the other question you have to ask: are there any divorces in the family? Because if the divorce is in the family and the you're a product of a second marriage, you have to make sure that there was a valid get. Because if you have an Orthodox marriage and they separate without a proper get, then you run into a serious problem of mamzerus. And we spent a lot of time again this past summer learning these sugyos of mamzerus. And again, I already gave you a little bit of a hint: what's known, what's not known. When do you turn over the rock? When you don't, be careful. If someone comes to you, you should be, don't make a mistake. We found so many leniencies this past summer that one of the time he asked me, so why do you ask a couple when they come to you if there are any divorces in the family, which implies that if it's bad, that maybe there's a shot of mamzerus, so you can matter everything anyway. Well, the answer is they're not matter everything anyway. But there are amazing kulas found in the Gedolei HaPoskim, including Rabbi Yoshev Zatzal. According to these psukim, and Rabbi Asher Weiss has it, Rabbi Vadya has it, they seem to say that even if you have the worst case scenario, if someone was married with an Orthodox ceremony, and then they got separated, and no get at all, and then the individual woman marries somebody else and has a child, well, not so sure Charles and Mamza. Not so sure Charles and Mamza. This is a classic textbook case. Who says that the man she married, quote unquote, is the father? Who says? Who says the father? So then the birth certificate. Who says it's right? That sounds like it's really pie in the sky. But these rabbanim insist on saying what they're saying, which is based on the following series of hypotheses.
Who cares if he isn't the father?
I'm sorry?
Who cares if that father isn't the father?
Ah, very good question. The answer is, we would assume that the father is a? No, fill in the blank. Goy. Why do we make that assumption? Because after all, most people in America are not Jewish. Not in most, but the concept found in the Gemara of Trey Ruby. Those who learn Ksubas, we learned Ksubas 2 years ago. So we learned Ksubas, it's a kind of Trey Ruby. That's the other way around. You have Trey Ruby of Jews, then she can marry a Kohen. But if you have Trey Ruby of Goyim, then we assume the child is not a mamzer because the child is this product of a married Jewish woman and a non-Jewish man, and we pass Halacha L'maaseh, and that child's not a mamzer. What do you mean? But she married a Jew. So what? That marriage is no marriage. So she just has a Jewish boyfriend. But she may have many non-Jewish boyfriends. We don't know. So this sounds like quite a stretch. But many rabbanim have signed on to this. And one of the critics in Israel said, if that's the case, you never can have a mamzer in chutz laretz. It's a mitzvah tliya baretz. It's unbelievable. But there are many rabbanim who in fact say this way. So I don't want to go that far, but you have to be careful. When do you turn over the rock, when you don't? I've had cases where someone came to me, a rav, that someone told him a story that there was a Holocaust survivor who thought her husband was dead, and she remarried, and now many years later the husband resurfaced, and the whole family of who knows dozens of people. What do you do that? So maybe you say mishpacha shenitma nitma, no one knows about it, no one will find out about it. It's partially, as I often say, it's partially a risk, kind of a judgment call, because even if you say suffix mamzer is okay and nitma is okay, what if that suffix becomes resolved and the nitma becomes ois nitma, where the stark facts present themselves with two edim? Then you're really in trouble. Someone who got married, you have to get divorced. So you don't want to put yourself in that situation. So therefore, if that's a possibility, I would not get involved. If you can make a judgment that's no longer possible, given as the years go by after the Holocaust, it's unlikely to find any real proof, then there's perhaps more reason to be lean and not turn over the rock. That's a psak I got from Zalman Nechem at the time. Don't turn over the rock. Just leave things be. You heard a story, it's only a story from an Eid Echad, you're going to Eidim coming to Besdin. Even though there's a rumor that this woman married after the Holocaust and the first husband surfaced thereafter and the children are over, just don't look. Don't, right? Just look at what it goes against our sensibilities. But that's what the poskim is saying based upon these gemaras that we just quoted. And another case of a geirus case. A woman wanted to be megayah before she gave birth to a child from a Jewish man. The whole story, she was from and he wasn't. So now we have our new rules in GPS, we can't do such a conversion. But this predates, this is 30 years ago or something like that. No, not that long ago. 20 years ago. So I resisted doing the geirus, you know, intuitively. If he's not from, how could she be from? But then, one of the rabbis in the yeshiva, Rabbi Adler Shlita, was pushing me, and because he knew this situation, he lived in the Lower East Side, and this woman is from some loft, living in a loft in Soho somewhere, and it was a civic center, that's right, is that the name of the shul down there, somewhere in Soho or something, I don't know, one of those lofts, Bohemians, you know, one of those. He was a photographer, you know, Mama's a classic case. So I say, after he pushed me, I said, okay, I'll meet with them, and she's way pregnant. And so I, he's from, Stanka from. So I asked him the standard question, I ask everybody. Tell me, were you any adoptions in your family? I tell the fellow, no. Any divorces in your family? He says, no. So she says, she looks him in the arm, says, right in my living room. Mickey, that's not true. One of us remembers the name Mickey. Mickey, that's not true. And she proceeded to say, she knew his history, that in fact, his grandmother was married and subsequently remarried, and we don't know if there's any ever again. And what got me very nervous was the dates. Apparently the original marriage was in the countryside pre-World War I. If you know the history, World War I, the Jews had to run everywhere. They were running and running and running. So the family ran to the big cities with a bohemian lifestyle. There were many non-from Jews in that kind of style, World War I time. And it was after the Iron Curtain fell. So I went to the records in, I think it was Budapest, to see if there was a record of a marriage of this grandfather and grandmother, the second marriage. No such record. They probably didn't get married. I looked for the divorce records, I can't find the divorce records. So now I'm left in a tough situation. I said, I'm not doing this. Why not? What do you mean? I'm going to produce Mamzerim, because he's a Mamzer, and she's not Jewish, there's no Mamzerim. So they're Goyim, so they can always convert and become kosher. That's another, it's a Mishnah. The Mishnah talks about over here in Masechta Kiddushin, a quick tour of the Masechta, this is what we're learning the Masechta this year. Okay, Yechol Mamzerim Nitoir, Samach Tesim and Aleph. Mamzer knows his Shivcha, Havlad Evet, Shichun and Saben Ben Chorin is kosher. There are actually some rabbis today who own Shivchas Kananias. I was not interested in buying. They told me that another yeshiva in this yeshiva would be interested in buying. Asked Rabbi Tendler if he wanted to buy a shivcha. They told me he was interested in purchasing shivchas for this purpose. Now my Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, was quoted as saying, that's ridiculous. It's against the Constitution. Could be in Sudan, it may still be on the internet. It could be Sudan, it would be the only country which still recognizes slavery. So you have to go to Sudan to take care of this problem. Anyway, so okay, so it'll be Be'yisr. So he lives with Be'yisr, but at least there'll be no Mamzerim. If I give it Gerish, we'll live with the Beheta, but I make Mamzerim. I'm not budging. So he says he's going to call his uncle. So I remember from my office, it was at the first hall, I called his uncle's from the Gedolei Hador Mamish, Abchaim Tzimbalist. Who was Avbezim in Tel Aviv and is in Yerushalayim? He said, "Mamash for the Gedolei Hador in Dayanus for sure." And he said to me, "No problem, just do it." Ata muchan lichtov li mikhtav hazeh. He wasn't ready to write me a letter so fast. I'm not doing it. Obviously, his nephew pressured him. Comes back 2 weeks later. Umuchan, called muchan lichtov mikhtav. So I said, "Call the next day. Come." Come tomorrow, come to the river del Mikvah, we'll do it right away. I'm busy, 2 days, I'll come late. What happened? She had the baby. She had to come a few weeks later, but she had a geirus on her, and a geirus on the daughter, and a wedding, and a shever brachos in the pizza shop. This has all happened in real life in Riverdale, whatever it was, how many years back. Yeah, real life story. Now, I don't know if I now that I heard Rav Tzimbelis is maskim, I'm also maskim that after all these things, you turn on, turn over the rock. Who's going to tell Adis what happened in Budapest? So maybe I was too strict at the time, but you know, I don't want to be involved in such a situation. Okay. This is just, since we're learning Kiddushin, I want to have some Kiddushin stuff in the introductory remarks for this year's version of Siddur Kiddushin, because most of what we're discussing is not found in Masechta Kiddushin. That's the reality of life. But this stuff certainly is. It's all found in the last lot in the third parak, Samach Tes. Whatever I quote you today so far is found from Samach Tes to Ayin Beis within those four blot. That's everything I quoted to you, and it's something quite remarkable. Again, Ein Kan Zman Umokom Laharech Yoser, but it's a very fascinating discussion. Okay, so I'm putting this away, closing the Gemara Kiddushin, and let's go a little bit further in discussing Siddur Kiddushin. So you're going to be called upon here and there to do a perform a wedding, and I recommend strongly that you meet the Chasen Kala before the wedding. Who's married in this room? Raise your hand. How many of you met with the rabbi who did the wedding before the wedding? Raise your hand. How many did not? Okay. Okay, that's a...
By myself.
You're by yourself. So, the rabbi who did the wedding, was he a shul rav or was he a Rosh Hashiva?
Kind of a
shul rav.
Shul
rav.
Rosh Hashiva mostly.
Okay. The general rule I found is that Rosh Hashivas usually don't meet with a couple in advance. When I got married, my Rebbe, I mean, it was a courtesy call. We went to Boston in the summertime, and the Rebbe was very courteous. And we spent a little time schmoozing, but nothing. He didn't ask one single question.
I'm sorry.
Everybody did. Okay. But Shul Rabbanim, I think, doing the right way. I think Rosh Hashiva should do the same thing. You know, they're asking some basic questions, see what's going on. You're doing a wedding. It's not just a covet. Not a covet. It's not interesting. It's an achrayus. I view myself as a maximalist Masechta Kiddushin, which means that you're in charge. You're in charge. You got to find out that the person is Jewish first of all. What do you mean, Rabbi? The person went 12 years to day school and 2 years in Israel. It all means nothing. Nothing means zero. Yes.
It's true, it might mean nothing, but that it seems to me the perception of what a chazaka would be. It doesn't necessarily establish a chazaka al pi halacha, but someone who objects in that sense, I feel like that's their assumption of the chazaka.
100%, but I'm telling you a fact that it proves absolutely nothing. How do I know this? Based on experience. Someone's in Stern College or Yeshiva College, not Jewish. Yeah. They grew up Jewish, went to school, yeshiva, Israel, that works. They're not Jewish. They tell you up front, they're not Jewish. How did it happen? It was an intermarriage, and their father was Jewish, and he went to a day school, and he just moved from there. But there was never any conversion. And I'm not talking about one case. Dozens of cases. Right? And as you go further from the core, it just expands. It can exist in Meir Sharim. This is a story from Meir Sharim. Listen to the story. Guy walks into a very chosh of Rabbi Meir Sharim and says, "You're doing a Siddur Kiddushin tonight, right?" "Yep." The chosh is not Jewish. Not Jewish. With his white socks, long pants. He's not Jewish. I'm telling you, he's not Jewish. Take it from me. I'm talking about from the war years, the person is not Jewish. Now, if you're a rabbi, what do you do? The family has 15 kids, and then they all went with the chosh. What do you mean? But somehow the rabbi had an intuition this guy's telling the truth. He was a reliable fellow. So he calls in the father the day of the wedding and says like this: "Chaim, I know the whole story. Tell me now, every last detail. If you don't tell me now, I'm going to expose you. You better tell me the whole thing right now." So the guy is taken aback and starts crying like a baby. He tells a sad story. He went through the Holocaust. He was half dead. And one of the Noshim Chassidos Umos HaOlam nursed him back to health. And they will say, well, forgive the expression today, they quote, fell in love. And they got married. Conditions were you can't begin to understand what the conditions were in 1945 after been, who knows, 5 years in camps. Who can you going to judge somebody? We'll take care of it. You know, this, like, you know, when you have a term paper, you know, we'll take care of it. Anyway, it's now 60 years later, whatever, 50 years later, they never took care of it. And this guy knew, because he was in the camps with them. He was an aide, he knew what was going on. So the guy broke down, and they converted the kid that day, and they converted the mother, and then 5, 10, or 50 other kids. The Maase Shoyim. It doesn't mean if you're in Meir Shalom, this can't happen. Now, obviously, it's a rarity, but that's the world we live in. The Achrayus sits with the Masada Kedushin, not the principal of the school, not the rabbi of the shul. That's where I come from. The Masada Kedushin, even in my situation, my own shul, people who are well known in the community, no question about it, but I knew there was a conversion. I never checked the papers. Made by mitzvahs, if aliyahs, no, I never checked anything. It's not my Achrayus, as you said correctly. The presumption is chazak. I agree with you, 100%. But if I was called upon by the Masada Kedushin, as I was at one particular situation, I said, gotta get the paperwork. And I got the paperwork, and Baruch Hashem was a valid conversion done in the borough of Manhattan. But, you know, I'm good. So I'm just letting you know, I view it as a tremendous responsibility. I love not to be Masada Kedushin. At least, I'm just looking around, at least one person who had to go through my Siddur Kedushin with my maximalist approach. But you remember the first line I told you, the very first line? The first line was, if you find another Rav, or another Rosh Yeshiva, or anybody else who would want to do it, I'll walk away at the last second. People fight to be Masada Kedushin. I fight not to be Masada Kedushin. I think it's a much wiser approach. They say in sports analogy, I'd rather pass than shoot. Pass and give it to somebody else. Let someone else have the headaches. See, there's a headache. It's an achrayus, it's a responsibility. I don't shirk it. I did it. Hope I did an okay job. But I wasn't looking to do it. I wasn't running to do it. But the Amalek Yaron, it was part of the Rabbanus. Being a Rav in, you know, a city was, if you're looking, you had a schus city kedushin. It went together with money. In those days, it was part of the issue. But it wasn't just a matter of money. There was no money. It was you are the Rav, you are the Masada Kedushin. You can just get some punky kid walks into the reserve. As I think it was Rabbi Tender once complained, I'm a rabbi for all these many years. The kid was in my shul, grew up for 22 years in my shul. And some punky kid who was a Rebbe in 6 months somewhere in Israel comes to Masada Kedushin. Now, me, it doesn't bother. I was recently at Eid Kedushin with Rabbi Shech, the Shlita, the two of us, Eid Kedushin. And that was what, I don't want to say what it was, but that kind of a resume, you know. Didn't bother me in the slightest, you know. Now, when I was in that matzah, I was scared. I didn't want to do any of it. When there's an older Rav there, I never wanted to do it. But sometimes you're forced to do it. Because you're beside a chassan, and then the rabbi's beside a kala. And no matter what, I try to pass once to Rabban Shech, the Shlita from Chaim Berlin, much older than me, but he was mitzvah kala, and the chosin's father wouldn't let. You're the rabbi, and the she's from Hungarian Jew. You're the rabbi, you're our rabbi, you have to do the wedding. You can't pass it off. You can't. So I did it. No choice. Being a mitzvah does not mean you're a talmid chacham, and vice versa. I'll tell you one other story. I heard the story from Rabbi Shapiro, Zichrono Livracha, was a rav in Miami years ago. He told me this story. He said he was there when the Stipler's daughter married up Shlomke Berman. Shlomke Berman, for those who don't know, was the Ilui Hador. He would have zichah been the head of punishment, but he got Parkinson's. He was sick for many, many years. He was a tremendous guy. So, fine. So, I don't know. I know he was. He was a few svarim before he got sick. Brilliant, brilliant. So he said this father, his father, they say his name was name, I forgot exactly what, first name, was a big pikeach, but he was stuck in between a rock and a hard place, because two chief rabbis were going to come to the wedding. Rabbi Katz from Petach Tikva, Rabbi Unterman from Tel Aviv. And whenever they came to the wedding, they did the Siddur Kedushin. They didn't come to, it wasn't so common those days that they should both be down to the Pundik Echem. And he's stuck, what's he going to do? And he went over to the Chazon Ish, the uncle. Said, Rebbe, this is Sof Yom of Mamash. You are the uncle, and no one's going to have a taina for you. You want to say you're the God of Ador. So he told me in Yiddish what the Chazon Ish told, this Rabbi Berman, who told Rishrit, in my Leben, the man is about to pass away from this world. The man who wrote the books on it, the Gadol HaDor Mamash, he said he was never in Masada Kedushin. So if you think that you become a Talmud Chacham by Siddur Kedushin, you have another guest coming. Okay? And there are many people who will do many Kedushin who are not Talmud Chacham, not one millionth of the Chazon Ish. So, the two don't go together. I don't think why it's a big covet. I think that we're past that. Now, I'm getting older, and sometimes when people get a little bit older, the quote from Chaim Shmulevitz. Chaim Shmulevitz said, he said a shmooze 50 years ago when I was in Eretz Yisrael, in the Mir Yeshiva, he said, when a person gets older, all the Eitz Haharos get weaker. All gets all physical, except the Eitz Hahara for covet. And he paused for effect and said in three words in Yiddish, Un ich weiß. And I know. He was an older man. The Yetzer of a covet, he conquered the Yetzer of a covet big time. No, he's a tzaddik sorol. But, I'm trying to follow him. Baruch Hashem. Okay, so that's just for starters. Good. Now, you have to speak to a chasen kala, and they hopefully should try to meet with them as soon as possible to make sure that they do things right and they don't do things and put them in place before you have a chance to correct them, and it could be a little problematic. You have to speak to the chasen kala about what we call today chasen kala classes. Now, when I was younger, there was no such thing as a chasen class. Kalas usually learn from their mothers. Now, became sort of de rigueur. You have to find the right person to learn from. Chasen is of course, more importantly for the kala, obviously, all the tires of the shpacha, and it's very important. Now, you may one day serve in pulpits where the people aren't from, and they're not going to keep tires of the shpacha. So you'll say, how can I marry them off? You may say, they over avera. So let me tell you a secret, which you probably know better than me. The same people who are not going to keep tires of the shpacha after they're married, fill in the blank. You're in violation right now too. Okay? So all you're doing is making one Isser less whenever they're together. Instead of being an Isser of Nida and Pnuya, you'll reduce it to an Isser of Nida only. So you're not, they can get married without you. There's no Difnaiver, there's no Messiah. To me, it's Poshet that it's permissible. Then it's Tzim as a Tshuva that if you get paid, it's permissible. Interesting Tshuva. Not for now. But Lamaisa, but you should still encourage it. You put all your efforts. The most important thing you can do, if you can get the woman to go to the mikveh even once, you never know what's going to happen from that. People think that mikveh in their mind is a dirty hole that they may have read about or seen in a movie somewhere, which was in fact the case in many situations. Today, I'll tell you where to send them. Send them to New Rochelle. They told me that, I haven't seen it yet, they told me that's like the Taj Mahal. I thought that the West Side was the Taj Mahal. They tell me you're now only in second place. That's why I wasn't there. I was in the new mikvah in Englewood. That's beautiful. I was told Tinek is beautiful. We do Geras. You go to see the mikvahs. Beautiful mikvahs. Beautiful. And she may, they can become spiritual. They may take a liking to it. They have a nice, good mikvah lady. You never know. You never know what can happen from once. So, of course, we can't force it. But we should still try our best to convince her to go, even if they're not from, to go to the mikvah. Fine. And even, I'll tell you another secret, even if she goes to the mikveh and she's not really a tahora because she didn't do Shiva Nikim and she couldn't even do Shiva Nikim, let her go to the mikveh. First of all, it could be a midoraisa. You don't need all these bedikas. It could be you don't need Shiva Nikim at all. She's a regular woman. You don't need the Rav Zera. There are many reasons why they send her to the mikveh no matter what. I will tell you a story which is not directly related to this, but it is. It's not limited to the Kiddushin. I have a friend, classmate of mine originally, a very wonderful person. He's a Refuah Shleima. Should be a schus for saying over his name, for which we have a Refuah Shleima. That he was living in Lakeland, New Jersey, and he was doing Kiruv. And They did try with Shabbos, try with Kashrus. You know, they were making a lot of headway. Came to Taras and Mishpacha all of a sudden. Apparently, the Yetzer Hara is stronger than the Yetzer Hara for money, the Yetzer Hara for food. You know, that's Shabbos and Kashrus, respectively. This is a strong Yetzer Hara that we see from here. Couldn't move them. But he had an idea. So he knows that in many, even in non-observant circles, the couple doesn't live together when she's actually bleeding. It's messy, it's not pleasant. Okay. And the average woman bleeds for 5 days, let's say. Okay? There's still something coming up. He had a chap. Midoraisa, as I'm sure you're aware, midoraisa, a woman could go to mikveh after she had 7 days, period, from the beginning of the period. That's it, done. So it's only a matter of two more days. Now, of course, we all know that the Chumah de Rav Zeh have to wait. We'll call it 5 plus 7. That's already you're talking about a whole extra week. That's already a big deal for a young couple. V'chule. So he went to Rav Moshe. Rebbe, yes, Rav Moshe Feinstein, the God of Ador. Rebbe, am I allowed to tell these couples are completely not from? I'll just tell them that we're not going to do all the laws in one shot. We're going to start with the laws slowly. And he's going to open up a chumash, and it says in the chumash that she sees a blood, she has to wait for a total of a week, and she goes to the mikveh. And this way, she goes to the mikveh, it's only 2 more days after she do. They normally begin together, it'll be 2 days. 2 days? For God, you can live without 2 days. Or, he asks for Moshe, am I in violation of the Sna'iv, the Sita, and Mitchell, because they're going to be in violation of the Chumah de Rav Zeh? Good question. You know Rav Moshe answered him? I have it from his authority, and he's an Erlich Deir, I told you. Rav Moshe said, backwards. If you don't tell them the Torah law, which is sent them 7 days in total, then you're over the Fnei. Because you're going to cause them to be over the need of the rest of their lives, and if you would have told them the Torah law, they'd keep that. How do you like that? No one's going to believe it. But I have it from a very reliable and responsible source that should have a refuah. So that's again, I'm not telling you what to do, every case is different, but you know, you have to use the judgment in what you can do. And obviously, I'm just talking only about situations that people aren't from. You can't say, well, I'm from, I want to take advantage of this too. No, chas v'shalom. It's only someone who's will otherwise keep nothing. Fine. There are many other things to talk about with the chas and kala at this, we'll call it prenuptial conference. And just give you some of them, in no particular order. You have to make sure that the place that they're getting married is kosher. Why? Kosher. The chazaka that it's kosher. Your chazaka. So let me tell you a secret. That there are rabbis, Orthodox rabbis, some of them learned in Lakewood Yeshiva. You can't trust their ashkar. Now where's the responsibility stop? By the Masada Kedush. Yeah, you have to make sure it's kosher. I'm very lenient when it comes to kosher, but you have to make sure it's kosher. Yeah, sure, it's kosher. Why not? But everyone eats there. Everyone eats there. They're in school for 12 years. It's all this everyone kind of a syndrome. It works until it doesn't work. So just keep you know, find what the ashkach is. It's important. Now there are many things to worry about. One is a wedding date. That's why you speak to the Messiah as soon as possible. Today there's a drug called Aegestin, Aegestin, which every Rav should know about. And if it's taken in the proper dose, you can read about it on YU Torah. I'm a co-author of an article with Dr. Grejauer from my shul. He's now, should have been printed by now, in a prestigious medical journal. Originally, it wasn't printed by anybody because the doctor said it's not enough medicine and the rabbi said it's not enough halach. So we had an idea. Put it in YU Torah. That's where it is now. But now, apparently, he did like this. He was smart. He titled it differently. I have a case of 500, that hard data. I have 500 cases in which a couple wanted to avoid menstruation and it worked without exception. Ooh, this already piqued their interest. People want to do it for their honeymoons. For their who knows what, for not do it from kind. They just want to avoid the period. So that apparently it's being printed or will be printed, and he has all the data. He says in small print Yeah, the data came from observant Jewish women who want to get married and don't want to have a chuppah neither. That's a small print. But the medical catch is that it's a lot of data because you've been doing this for so many years. The right dosage always works. So no matter what the wedding date is, it always can be done. Other women go on what they call birth control pills, which have two problems. One is birth control, which is itself a problem. Since we have a Shulchan Aruch here today, that's a very serious problem. The very first page, V'chayav livel b'chol ona, afilu shehirshes es bala sheyimna onasa, chayav livel b'chol ona at sheyu lo bonim, kekos lev haramba, chen yisal lekaman simenayin vav. So he has a question. If they have bonim, and she says it's okay, they don't have to be together. Why? Even if you have a boy and a girl, you have to fulfill the era of al tanach yadacha. You have to have more children, Well, the answer is quite clear. The answer is, he didn't say you shouldn't have more children. That after you have two children, you're not required to have bia b'chol ona v'ona, which is your typical marital obligation, in order to produce children. You'll wait till next month, when you'll be together with when she's fertile, etc., etc. You have to be right now. That's the push-up shot. But we do see from here, is that when they get married, that they have an obligation. Chayev, Rambam says, use chayev. Chayev means an obligation to try to bring children into the world immediately. If you look in the Rambam, he says that a man is not permitted to marry a ketana. A ketana is a woman who is still too young to have children, even though Mitzvah Shema she'll be healthy and 4 more years she'll be able to have children. So what's the rush? You're not allowed to marry her. So it's a Rafush and Rambam. Apparently there is a rush. But today, Rabbi, you don't understand. Today is different. Why is different? Can't afford it. What? And your great-grandmother and your great-grandfather could afford to have your grandfather, could afford to have your father, could afford to have you? None of the above. If you can wait to afford it, in today's world, with all the high tuition, I don't know if I can ever have a child. As a Bavadi writes so many times, Man de Yoav Chayov Mizonit. If Hashem gives you children, someone will survive. People aren't dying of starvation so much. Anyway, so that's one reason I don't like birth control, because even though they do it originally just to regulate, it's a very convenient thing. They get into the habit, it's nice, it's good, which I think is a very bad habit. Again, health permitting, it's a very bad habit. Number one. Number two, it stains. Birth control is famous for staining. And number three, even if you do it well and there's no stain before the marriage, if you want to get off it, which you should after the marriage, it often knocks out the system, goes haywire until things settle down. A lot of nidah problems post marriage. Egestin does none of the above. And the biggest plus of egestin is you don't have to take it. Wow. Yeah, you usually don't have to take it. Because if they want to, these days when a woman gets engaged, she gets two things: a diamond ring, which is also a problem, and and birth control pills to regulate her for the wedding. Right. So it's a de rigueur to make sure she. And there are many women who've told me, crying, if they would have done nothing, they'd have been okay. But they did the birth control pills and they start staining, and it made it much worse. But they say you have to start 3 months before. If you don't start 3 months before, it's going to stain, more chance of staining. Egestin, if things are going according to the calendar and they set the date right, you don't have to take anything. If things are going off, that's when you take it, the last month. That's a much better solution. But again, it has to be the right dosage. People just try to skimp on the dosage, it breaks through. Keep that in mind. In any event, it's important to discuss some of these things with the Chos and Kala at the very beginning. And the truth is, the first line of Shulchan Aruch, Chayev kol adam lisa isha kidei lifros vilirbos. The first line. Now, the Vilna Gaon has a remarkable comment over here. The first Vilna Gaon in Eben Ezra, quite remarkable. What did he say? Typical Vilna Gaon, speaks in Remises. He said, look in Sof Tanis. This is the same way we got at the beginning of the Shia about money, the end of the Shia about money. Sof Tanis, it tells you, here's Shas. So if Tanis ever knows, who doesn't know the story of Tu B'Av? Oh, Yom Tov Yisroel Tu B'Av. Okay, the last Mishnah in the Sefta Tanis. The Mishnah is found over here. On Daf Chav Vav Omid Beis. What happened? B'Nos Yisroel, Yosef, B'Klei Lovan, etc. What they say? Bocha, saw no einecha, reimata borlecha, al titein einecha benoi. Don't look at beauty. Can we add? Don't look at money. Tain einecha b'mishpacha. Sheker rachem evel yofi. Yisur shorosh v'sala. Wow. This is the Mishnah. Halachistam Mishnah. Later on, the Gemara has the other half of the equation. Right? But people, other people were looking at. Here we go. Oh, the last Gemara. Laman Alf and Alf. Now, Yofiel Sheben, the beauty one said, to an Echel the Yofi, Shenishel the Yofi. What we call that in America? Accentuate the positive. Beautiful, look at beauty. Yuchasa said, to an Echel the Mishpacha, and if you're a good family, there's a better chance of good children. Mechuaras Shevan, they were ugly. What they say? Chumichachem l'shem shemayim. They add, Uvilvad sheta'atrunu bizuhuvim. What does that mean? It means you give us, we'll say today, you'll give us fancy clothes, you give us makeup, and it's, you know, makeup could cover anything. Says the Gra, that's chat in the sugi over here. He says, these are the three things. Three things. Right? Either what? Tachshitin, Yofi, or Banim. But the Stam Mishnah only has Mishpacha. That's why it says over here, Lifos for Lirvos. Not for Yofi or for money. That's pshat. Sheker achein v'hevel layofi. What does that mean? Chein is tachshitin ki achein u'machnas dover acher. As it says, Esti yirak rokes v'ti yest anos his chein. See, if you kick them up from school, they come out with Esther being green. It's ridiculous. She was yellow. Yorick Akarasi is green. She was yellow. She had bad complexion. She wasn't so pretty. But she was tremendously charming. No, says chayim being around. She didn't even need makeup. So says she, that's the psukim saying that she didn't want makeup. But she was still very charming. It's hard to turn that charm off. Okay. Whereas Yofi is intrinsic beauty. So now there's a Rashi can't resist the Rashi in this week's parsha. Yeah, we learn chumash Thursday. We learn chumash and Rashi, which we might have to reschedule for next Thursday. Or it's time before we start. We have to reschedule. So everyone knows the Rashi. Is Solomon Chumash and Rashi yet? Hine no yadati ki ishi yafas mara'ot. Right? What does Rashi say? Rashi gives an impression that he never didn't know his wife was beautiful. And whenever they learn in school, they start jeering and making fun of the Rashi. Says the Vilna Gaon, it's not quoted here. If you look at the Birchas Eliyahu, page 1, he quotes it from the Gaon. I don't know where else to find it. I only saw it there. Pshat Pshat. Avraham Avinu knew that Sarah was the most beautiful woman. Everyone is kof compared to Sarah. She was absolutely beautiful. Only one thing he didn't know. He didn't know, was she intrinsically beautiful? Or she always made herself up. She was always, she put herself nicely, dressed nicely, and nice jewelry, and nice makeup, a nice lipstick, and I don't know. Otto Kiruchla, like someone gives that makeup to. We should list all the kinds of makeup. Maybe she was beautiful, she was always made up. Hine no yodati. Now I know. Because now they're going down to Mitzrayim. And now the best thing is to look ugly. And so Sarah did her best to look ugly. But she was still beautiful. It wasn't Chen, it was Yofi. That's Pshat. Hine no yodati isha yufas marat. Maybe it was Chen. God love the Vilna Gaon's Pshat. So So if you, someone asks you over the Shabbos, what's this Rashi? Well, I could have never looked at his wife. He knew his wife. She was beautiful. He didn't know exactly why. I'd come from the Vilna Gaon. In any event, there are many other things to be talked about, such as, for example, where the wedding is going to be. It's another important question. Are you allowed to get married in a shul? So the Chasam Sofer made a cherem against getting married in a shul. A cherem, no less than that. Can't get married in a shul. Why? Who knows why? No one knows why? Chukos Hagoyim. Chukos Hagoyim. The guy got married in the church, and then the Jews started getting married in a shul to copy the guy. That's what he said. Rabbi David Lipschitz, the Chavon Rocha, would not come into a chuppah in a shul. He wouldn't come. I was once at a wedding with his, it was a wedding with one of his closest talmidim, got married in the shul because the father of the, of this talmid was a rabbi in a beautiful shul, and it was obvious that the wedding had to be there. Rabbi David did not come. Came after the chuppah. A ma'aseh shalom. Didn't come. Came after the chuppah. My Rebbe was not so big into getting married in the shul, not because of the Chasam Sofer's reason. He said, what are you getting married in the shul for? The shul is for davening, for learning. All right, you want to have a bris in the shul, I understand, so you have to davening. No, but married? What are you getting married in the shul for? You're married in a wedding hall. But he did go to weddings and shuls. That's a fact. It wasn't such a level of objectionability. It's interesting, Chor Nafkami would be a non-Orthodox shul. According to my Rebbe, Meiridik, there's no Kedusha. So no problem getting married there. According to Rab David, it's even more Chukos Lagoyim. It's a Shul Al Mechitza. It's even worse. And there's some people who will not walk into such a place. I was once at a wedding in the Sephardic temple. You know, in Cedarhurst there? And a guy comes to me and says, where's the Mechitza? I said, there is none. Hey, run out like you're running from a fire. He wouldn't walk into a place with no Mechitza. And there was son, never walk in. No, I admire what he did. That was it. I think he said, Chutna said that way, or somebody said that way. He ran out. I understand that. Because, you know, we don't want to blur the lines between Orthodox and non Orthodox. You know, Mechitza is the simon. My misora was that if the local rabbis in that community go into such places, I'm not going to be holier than thou. So I've done weddings and walked into these situations, both in the Five Towns and the Teaneck, to give examples of from popular communities, where the chosh of a local rabbi were doing it. So I did weddings in those places, even if it were placed without a mechitza. But my personal natiya is like this fellow ran out. That's why, for example, in my own community where I live, I'm there for over 40 years, never walked into those places. Never walked in. Yeah.
The shul is built after 9, and it should also be
a wedding hall?
Yeah, like sanctuary and wedding.
Okay, if they made it after 9, then it's not really a shul. So you have the plus of wedding hall, but I wouldn't want to dive in such a place, not a shul. Diving in a casino. Even the bungalow counties. Or multi purpose room. It's not the dive, it's dive, but it doesn't have to be basic nest if they made it out tonight, but pshuta. Yeah, there are other lumdush shot, but that's a pashup shot. So therefore, you want to know, you have an input where the wedding is going to be. Maybe what time they come to you, it's already too late. Okay, so the general principle is going to be, you have to make a line for yourself what you're going to accept and what you're not going to accept. I think everyone in this room will not accept to do a wedding if the food is not kosher. But you leave before the food. No. You have a right to say that. But there are many other things which we're not happy that are going on. And you have to make a decision. It's hard to make a decision. Every case is different. Every rabbi is different. Every shul is different. The community is different. Where are you going to say this? You want to do it because you don't hate. Maybe I'll even come, but I don't want to do the wedding under such circumstances. I'll give an example. Mixed dancing. For decades, I never saw mixed dancing at an Orthodox Jewish wedding. It used to be it was rampant, and it stopped. But now I think it's making a comeback. Have you seen it, Rabbi Stein? Have you seen it? The comeback. Comeback kid.
It's mixed dancing.
Huh?
The third dance.
Whatever the dance, yeah, whatever, some dance at the end. So, you know, you can have three positions. I'm not doing it. I said, get somebody else. Or you can say, listen, I don't want to do it, but underneath I'll do it. Or the pshar is, not in my backyard, not when I'm there. You have to wait till I leave, and then you can do what you want to do. I'm old enough to remember when most of the, we'll call Young Israel shuls in New York City had mixed dancing. And sometimes the rabbi led the dancing. Sometimes the rabbi observed the dancing. And the frum ones, like Rabbi Schoenfeld Shlita, he would not let him dance till he walked out. That was the annual dinner every year. They had, the Chassidish dancing, the men, the women, beautiful. Then they would bench, the rabbi would leave. This has gone on for years. You can't, the rabbi was fighting for Shabbos and Kashrus. It was fine. You have to know every situation is different. So you may decide, okay, if that's what you won't do until I leave. So then, again, what you won't see, what hurt you. I said it before, a much more high stakes situation. I can't tell you where to draw your line. There may be other things, including, we'll get to it, some of the egalitarian manifestations, which are, every year there's more. So we'll discuss some of those things, but you can make a decision to either do it or not do it with X, Y, or Z. They want it to go on. In my situation, I'm able to tell people, listen, if you want my Siddur Kedushin, this is the way I do it. You want a different way, I love you, just get a different Messiah Kedushin. This is my brand, So not everyone's able to do that, depending on the particular circumstances. So I'm sorry, I'm 3 minutes over, I apologize. I'll try to end on time if I can. It's hard to. When's that next year? Next Thursday I'm on a plane. So when are we going to do it? The time medium here, off a different day of the week. That's instead of Thursday, or is Thursday the only day you can make it at this time?
Tuesday?
No,
actually Tuesday.
What's that? 1:30. Tuesdays, no conference on Tuesdays, 1:30?
Yeah.
You do have?
Yeah.
So is it a different day that?
We have
Shia. So our Shia, we can do something different. We can postpone this all until I come back and just double up later on if you want. I owe you next week is no Shia because I'm going there for the yeshiva. I went today if they needed it. Huh? Yeah, but Thanksgiving I'm also in Eretz Yisrael. I'm not coming back until the next day. So we'll have a double up somewhere down the road. So I'm not going to see you officially until 3 weeks.